Thank you for hitting play. This is Timothy Chemo Brian, your guide to the Podverse on Find a Podcast About, and this is a bonus episode. Recently, I got a chance, a rare opportunity, to sit down with one of the podcast hosts that I reviewed. Now, who did I get to sit down with? Well, none other than Guy Kawasaki. And let me tell you, it was a wonderful time that we had talking about remarkable people, his podcast, and, you know, what was behind the podcast, what was behind the idea, and where he's looking to take it next. I'd like to indulge me, if you would, for just a moment to let you know how this interview came about. So I had recorded the episode, and usually I try to send out the episode ahead of time and then say, hey, you know, I'm going to put this episode out in a couple of weeks. Can we do an interview? And I had actually put out the episode. I had actually accidentally hit submit, and I had put out the episode as I was sending it to him. When I emailed him, within a few hours, I got an email back from him, and basically it said, holy shit, and thank you, and can I be on your show? You're not going to say no to Guy Kawasaki when he asks to be on your show. You're going to find the time to make it happen. And I found the time to make it happen, obviously, because I'm here talking to you about it, with the wonderful help from his assistant, Madison. So I'm going to step out of the way, and I'm going to go ahead and let you listen to my talk with Guy Kawasaki. All right. So I have with me here Guy Kawasaki from the Remarkable People podcast. Guy, how is it out there in California today?
It is beautiful. And you are standing between me and going surfing. So let's get this show on the road.
Absolutely. Well, I'm getting snow here, so I'm going sledding with my kids after we're done today.
Oh, yeah. And then, you know, we really didn't plan this well. This is a federal holiday today.
Oh, it's perfect for me because I work for the federal government and I have today off.
Oh, okay. I planned it that way.
Yeah, exactly. Of course you did. Of course you did. So, Guy, what drives you to make this podcast? I mean, it's called Remarkable People Podcast, and in every episode, you know, you say, you know, I want to, you know, make you remarkable, which I think is awesome. But what drives you to sit behind the microphone and talk to these wonderful and remarkable people?
I really, when I die, I want people to remember me in two words, and they don't be giving it F and Y. Okay. The two words are empowered people. So I want people to say, you know, when Guy was alive, he wrote, he spoke, he podcasted, he invested, he advised, he empowered me. And podcasting, I have found, is truly, this is the best work I've ever done in my career. It's also the least appreciated, but it's the best work that I've ever done. And in a sense, my whole career has prepared me for podcasting. And my podcast had a sponsor for the first year and a half or so, but ever since then, revenues are zero. And I haven't really tried to find sponsors or advertisers because, you know, whenever you get into a discussion with them, let's say I get 25,000 downloads per episode. And I say, okay, so 25,000, let's divide that by 1,000. So that's 25. And then we'll multiply by the CPM of 20. So, you know, you get $500. And then you do four at once. It's $2,000, like not worth sucking up to you for $2,000. So I kind of believe that my podcast will truly not be appreciated until I'm dead. Mm-hmm. Of course, after I'm dead, I won't know or care. But anyway, so I love podcasting. I interviewed someone named Mark Manson on my podcast. He's the subtle art of not giving a you-know-what. And he said to me, you know, Guy, you have discovered your calling, your passion, your ikigai. You know you're on the right track when you enjoy something that other people consider a shit sandwich.
Mm-hmm.
And so yep. Podcasting has a lot of shit sandwiches. You know, you have to spend hours prepping for an interview. You spend hours editing it. And then other people edit too. So we probably spend 15 hours for an hour of podcast. And, you know, I know people who say, you know, Guy, my theory is you turn on record and you play it as it is. And that's, we don't do that at all. And that's a good way to say right there, because we take out all the ums and ahs and filler words. And when people like go down a path and then they come back up and they, you know, say, working for Steve Jobs, wow, let me think about it. Oh yeah, was the hardest task in my life. All I really care about is it was the hardest task in my life. I don't care about all the shit that came before it. So it involves a lot of work. And then I look at podcasting in terms of a Venn diagram. So on this Venn diagram, the first circle is, do you have access to people worth recording? And luckily I do because of my Macintosh pass. So lots of people know me from my Macintosh pass. That's how you get to a Jane Goodall, believe it or not. And then, so you have that circle. And then you have to have enough life experience to ask good questions of Jane Goodall or Stacey Abrams or Steve Wozniak or Stephen Wolfram. I would make the case, if you're 22 years old, you probably don't know what to ask yet.
True.
And then the third circle is you got to have the balls to ask the tough questions. And so if you drew those three circles, think I'm in the unison, that in the middle, there are not too many people in there. And I really spent a long time trying to create questions that have never been asked before. And one of the things that makes me the happiest is when one of my guests say, you know, Guy, no one has ever asked me that before. And that is a very good question. That just makes my day. That simple things make me happy. That makes me very happy.
Every time I have that happen to me, I ring a bell. I'm just, you know, that's the goal of the interview is to go, have you guys go, you know what? No, that's a great question. No one's ever asked me that before. Yeah. And I'm just like, successful interview. Let's hit publish and put it away.
You could stop it right there. Yeah. You know, I try to ask questions that not only has no one ever asked before, but it shows that I truly have done research. And it's not just me. It's someone who helps me with the research. We do hours of research. And usually I'm interviewing an author. So I at least read one book, the book that's about to come out. And so it is a lot of work. But yeah, when they say that, that is a very satisfying thing.
It makes it worthwhile for sure. With all these remarkable people that you do get the opportunity to talk to, how do you determine if a person is remarkable or not? Because you've got over 200 episodes, and I've noticed that, you know, you haven't interviewed some people. I'll put his name out there. You haven't interviewed Donald Trump yet, as far as I know.
By what test do you think Donald Trump is remarkable? Because he doesn't pass any of my tests. So, you know, the name of the podcast and the name of the book is Think Remarkable, not Think Rich, not Think Famous. It's Think Remarkable. And so for me, remarkability is about the difference that you've made in the world. Now, you don't have to be Jane Goodall or you don't have to be Steve Wozniak to be on Think Remarkable. It's a matter of making the difference. It can be to one classroom. It could be to one kid. It could be to one spouse. It could also be to yourself that you just made a huge difference. You set an example for society. So guess what? I have had no hedge fund managers on my podcast, no private equity. I don't think I've had any professional VCs. On the other hand, I've had many convicted felons, homeless people, you know, people that would you would not have heard of. And I delight in that. You know, of course, you know, if you can get a Jane Goodall or a Stacey Abrams or Michelle Obama or, you know, somebody like that. Of course you take them. And don't get me wrong. Once you get them, everything else is easy because nobody turns you down when you say, would you like to be on my podcast? Because I'm often asked that question. And the first thing I ask is, well, who else has been on? And if they say Jane Goodall, Stacey Abrams, Steve Wozniak, Stephen Wolfram, Angela Duckworth, Katie Milkman, Bob Cialdini, David Acker, like, where do I sign up? Let's like record right now. Let's just do this.
Yep.
So and I'll tell you that right now we get about 10 requests a day to be on the podcast that we turn down. And many of them, this is a little bit of a hyperbole, but many of them are, the pitch goes like this. Get ready to laugh. Okay.
All right.
The pitch either from Joel or Joel Blow's PR firm, but it's, anyway, the pitch goes along the lines of Joel Blow is 22 years old and he has a lot to add to your podcast. We think he would fit right in with the other episodes that I've enjoyed with Jane Goodall and Stacey Abrams and Stephen Wolfram and MacArthur Award, MacArthur Fellows and Nobel Prize winners. And he has created a 7-digit executive coaching business. And he has just written what's destined to be a bestseller. It's called The Blow Way, published by Blow Press, written by Joel Blow. And and I swear to God, every time that happens, I think, you know, guy, this is a trick. This is somebody who's doing a survey of podcasters to see who responds. Who tells you, what the hell are you thinking? Why'd you even bother me? You know, who reacts really negatively and who shows graciousness and tells us no and answers in a professional manner? So because I believe that that test could be happening, Madison answers for me. Because if it was up to me, I'll say, how is Joel Blow related to Jane Goodall?
Okay.
What's the connect? On what scale are they equals?
Right. Exactly. I get that all the time. And the thing that I love is, cause I always say my name in my show and I get the, hello, create our podcast or find a podcast about. And I'm like, really? Come on, you didn't listen to a episode.
Right.
And, you know, with this show, it's all about, you know, showing people binge-worthy podcast stuff that, you know, they're going to want to listen to because it's so, I don't want to say it's difficult to find a good podcast because there's 4 million out there. It's difficult to find a good podcast for what you're interested in and for what you want to listen to. And that's what I do to try to help folks out, with stuff that I'm excited about. You know, it's just a service I provide. I'm not making, Joe Rogan money doing it either, you know.
Well, neither am I. If that makes you feel better.
It makes me feel great. It makes me feel great.
But I have to say, when I saw your selection of my podcast, that made more than my day. It made a week or a month because it shows that somebody recognizes my effort and someone who, you know, I'm not related to or doesn't owe me money. And, you know, I don't know. It's not like we were BFFs before. So, you know, you write me a blurb, I'll write you a blurb. This came out of nowhere for me. And I said, oh, this guy obviously looks at a lot of podcasts and he selected you guys. So you must be doing something right. So that just, I think between the time you sent me the email, I responded was like 2 minutes, right? I mean, I was just so happy.
I got the response back and I was like, you know, the subject matter is holy shit. And I'm like, uh-oh, what did I do wrong? God, sue me. Oh, damn it. My 20-year career in podcasting gone.
I mean, for the 15th time, yeah, that really made my day. And going back to Mark Manson, when you find something you truly love, you know, there's the concept of ikigai. I mentioned it in my book. And ikigai roughly translates to, you know, finding your calling, your reason to live and get up in the morning. And I think the American interpretation of ikigai is you find the intersection of what you love to do, what you're good at, and what you can make money at. And, okay, I'm third generation Japanese American, born and raised in Hawaii, okay? I'm as American as can be. Mm-hmm. So I don't want you to think I'm some kind of Shinto monk that has been spending, you know, 3 decades studying the meaning in life at the base of Mount Fuji, okay? But right. So with that caveat that I really might not know what the hell I'm talking about, I think that definition of ikigai underplays ikigai. Ikigai is not the intersection of what you love, what you're good at, and what you can make money at. Ikigai is when you are not good at something, and when you are, you know, and you don't enjoy it, it's a shit sandwich, and you don't make money, but you still do it. That's when you know you find something you love. Because anybody can love something you make money at and you're good at, right? And it's easy. That's easy. I mean, I would go be a hedge fund manager and call out plagiarism as my mission in life.
With this podcast, and you and I are not making Joe Rogan money.
Really?
But, well, maybe after this episode, we will. You never know. I'll call up Spotify, see what we can do. For you, what does success look like? I mean, it's not the money, and it's not the download numbers. When do you know that this is something I enjoy doing? This is something, even though it's not making me money, it's not making me famous, but I enjoy doing it. What does that success look like for you?
I don't know, but I keep doing it. You know, it's just, I mean, you could ask Madison. So Madison sits in on every podcast, right? Because believe it or not, I'm deaf. And because I'm deaf, I cannot hear the nuances of buzzing or, you know, stuff that's happening audio wise. I'm working with a cochlear implant, which is a miracle, but it's not like it returns your hearing to 100%. And after many of these episodes, I say to Madison, God damn, Madison, that was a good episode. Or like last week, we interviewed Angela Duckworth. Angela Duckworth is the mother of grit. And so MacArthur Fellow, professor at University of Pennsylvania. And so we get in discussion with her. And I don't know how it happened, but suddenly she said, you know, I just want to talk about my parents because my father was this huge influence on me. He drove me to accomplish all this. And for the longest time, I thought that my mother was not nearly ambitious. But then I thought about it, and my mother moved here from Taiwan or China by herself, knowing no one. And she survived, and she raised me, and she dedicated her life to me and her sisters. And, you know, she was never able, and my father didn't support her independent, intellectual, artistic pursuits. And now, you know, she's 90, and she has the time. So she went to her nursing home and said, I want another unit. One unit is not enough. And they said, well, why do you need another unit? She said, I'm going to turn that into my art studio and I'm going to paint in there. And she said, and now at the end of her life, I have truly realized how ambitious and artistic and just remarkable my mother is that I just did not understand that. Okay. So you're not going to get a story like that on Joe Rogan.
No, I guarantee. Absolutely not.
I mean, even if you listen to all 4 hours, you will not hear a story like that. So this is Angela Duckworth, MacArthur Fellow, talking about the discovery of how remarkable her mother was. I think that may be one of the best stories we've heard on remarkable people. After that, I was doing high fives with Madison that, you know, where has she ever said this before? Nowhere.
Exactly.
Nowhere.
Right.
Right.
Yep. Well, and there you go. There's your success right there.
Yeah.
That's why you do it. Absolutely. Absolutely. We found your success. Fantastic. Where do you see this going in 3 to 5 years? You've been doing it since right before the pandemic started.
Yeah.
And we're here in 2024.
200 episodes. Hey.
200 episodes. 219 and counting.
You know, I don't know. I am very fortunate. And I am very fortunate because of, you know, well, many things, but I have been able to secure a financial standard because of my prior work in tech, such that
right.
I could do 219 episodes and I can continue to do them even though I lose money on every one. Mm-hmm. So I have explained this to people that, you know, in Silicon Valley, some people pay $250,000 and join a country club. Some people buy art. Some people gamble. Some people do drugs. Some people have multiple mistresses. I have podcasting and surfing.
Okay.
On the spectrum of diversions, podcasting and surfing are pretty pretty. That's just what I do. And do I foresee an end? Well, I guess I would end if I run out of remarkable people, but that doesn't seem to be happening. And like, yeah. Well, I often think, you know, if I didn't do podcasting and I didn't do surfing, what would I do all day? I would just watch Fox all day. And then what?
Exactly. Yeah. What else are you going to do?
Oh, then I could get on Joe Rogan.
There you go. Joe, if you're listening, and I know you are, you know, like a grab guy. He can, you know, he'll make your show fantastic. Well, who is this podcast for specifically? Like for me, I have an avatar and I actually have a picture of the person that this podcast is for all my podcasts, actually. I was lucky enough, in my previous job, that, you know, I had somebody that was really into podcasting, really into, learning about podcasts and learning about art at the same time. So I've got his picture right here, but for you, who's your avatar? Who is this for?
You know, you may find this remarkable coming from a marketer. I have no freaking clue. I just, okay. You know, I think it takes a certain amount of people with a growth mindset that they think they can listen to a podcast and somehow make a difference and improve their lives. If you didn't think that, then you're wasting an hour listening to my podcast, because my podcast is extremely optimistic. And I also view my podcast and also my social media as this is a gift that I've been given. And so I cannot squander this gift. So for example, I also use both things to do what I hope is helping preserve democracy. So you will not find a less neutral social media and podcast presence than mine. People will know exactly where I stand.
That's why I've noticed that you haven't had Trump on yet. Absolutely.
I never will. You know, I tried to get Adam Kinzinger and I got close, but then his office ghosted me. And so if Adam Kinzinger is listening out there, talk to your staff. I would take Liz Cheney, even though we disagree on many issues. I think she's done a very interesting thing. I probably would take Mitt Romney too. But you know, if you said to me, Guy, if you had a magic bullet and you could get anyone, I would want Michelle Obama.
Okay.
Before it was Stacey Abrams, and I got Stacey Abrams. So, Michelle, I'm sorry. I wanted Stacey more than you, but you're second. Now you're moved up. So if you're listening, Michelle, guykawasaki@gmail.com.
And, folks, he answers the email. Well, Madison answers the, you know, reads the email, and then Guy answers it. So, proof positive right here.
Well, folks, if you get a really heartfelt, lengthy, emotional, touching email came from Madison.
And if you got the one that I got, which was holy shit.
That's me. That's me. Yeah. If this is holy shit, you made my week. How can I be on your podcast? That's me.
So, Guy, what podcasts are you listening to that you would recommend to others?
So, as an organization, I think it's hard to go wrong with anything that Freakonomics puts out. So, Stephen Dubner is great. You know, Guy Raz, How I Did This or How I Made This or whatever. Angela Duckworth, this, you know, No Stupid Questions. I just love the Freakonomics platform, everybody they have. NPR, wait, don't tell me, but I don't know if you call that a podcast or that's just a rebroadcast of a radio show. I had Peter Sagal on my podcast and I love wait, don't tell me. Just the level of wit is so cutting edge. And in my humble opinion, wit is a sign of great intelligence. So, for example, have you ever heard Donald Trump say anything witty? Never.
No.
Never.
No.
Anyway, so now there are other NPR podcasts, but you know, some of the NPR podcasts, they seem to have this style. Now, don't get me wrong. I have NPR envy, okay?
Like, sure.
If somebody said I could have the downloads of NPR podcasts, you know, where do I sign up? Maybe I just need to buy a Neumann mic. But anyway, so, but I think some of the questions I listen to, it's kind of like, I'll give you an example.
Mm-hmm.
So you saw your father murder your mother when you were 8 years old. Did that affect you? Or like, duh, dumb shit. Yeah, you saw your father murder your mother, you're 8 years old, and you're asking him if it affected him. Well, hello. You know, and sometimes they go like in this 5-minute, like, according to your book, in 1965, you marched over there, you know, in Selma, and then in 1967, you entered Congress, and then in 1970, you got a MacArthur Fellowship. So, have you made progress in your career? Like, hello.
Yes, I did. I'm on NPR now. There you go.
There you go. But again, with the caveat that I have NPR envy. So maybe it's just jealousy.
It could be. It could. I don't think it's the mic. I really don't think it's the microphone.
Well, when you've eliminated everything else, it comes down to the mic.
Exactly. Yeah. At the end of the day, it comes to the mic.
But have you ever fantasized about buying a Neumann mic?
A little backstory here on me. I work for Custom Border Protection. That's my day job.
You do?
And I did. Oh yeah. Yeah. I'm one of the bad guys.
Oh, wow.
But we have a, office of, public affairs.
Yeah.
And I helped them start up their podcast, their internal podcast. And they have 3 Neumann mics.
Really?
And they let me use it. And the microphone that I have right now, this is not an advertisement for them, but if they want to sponsor the show, I'll let them do that. I'm not above that. I have a RE320 by Electro Voice. And I love how this sounds with my voice.
Really?
Versus the Neumann. The Neumann sounds a little too sterile to me.
Huh.
This is very warm and whenever, cause I'll listen to my own show just to, you know, listen for any mistakes or anything like that. But it makes me feel like I'm sitting in front of a fire with a nice cup of coffee going.
Well, that's the sound. I want to get the NPR sound. And this is a Heil PR40. And I just learned about a Santa Cruz company called Universal Audio. Okay. Mm-hmm. And they have these 2 mics that electronically you can simulate which mics the mic copies. So you can get a Neumann mic simulator.
But not pay for the Neumann mic.
Yeah. And it costs less than a Neumann mic. And there's like one model has like 22 and the other has 36 mics you can pick from. So I thought about doing that. But then I have 2 studios. So then I'd have to get 2 of these and then I like the NF.
You know what? They're going to listen to this podcast and they're going to sponsor your show and give you both of them for free. There you go. And you won't even have to mention them on your show. So,
but you know, the irony, podcasters, the podcasters. So I don't know about you, but I'm taking out all these filler words and lots of interviewees. They happen to do this, right? They get this a little sucking of your tongue and we take all of those out. And I'm using this high old PR40, which is on the scale of things, relatively an expensive mic, not Neumann expense, but you know, it ain't exactly just a USB mic. So anyway,
right.
And you know, and I know that 90% of the time our podcast is being listened to in an internal combustion car going at a freeway where the outside noise is already 70 decibels. And we're worried about, is that a Neumann or a Heil? Right.
Exactly. And then I hear other podcasts. One of them I reviewed a while back. It's called The Second Half Podcast. And the guy, he uses his laptop microphone.
Yeah.
And he coughs through it and he snorts and takes drinks. And he makes money off of his podcast. He makes about $500 to $1,000 a month for a weekly podcast. And I'm sitting there going, I paid $300 for this microphone. What's up with that?
I mean, there's a good lesson there that it's not necessarily the equipment.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, you could say Henri, what's his name? Henri, what's the photographer's name? Henri Cartier, not Cartier. What's the famous French photographer that only used the 50 millimeter camera? Henri Bussard or Henri? Oh, all your listeners saying, guy, you're such an idiot. It's Henri. he did only black and white photographs. I think only a 50 millimeter lens or only a 35 millimeter lens. Right. So any of us have a phone today that has 200 times better camera than what he had.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
I don't see people making books of our photograph.
You never know. You know what? We'll have to test it out. We need to make the book. We need to self-publish the book. That's what we need to do.
Well, mostly my book would show me eating.
Well, and I'd like to lead into that. You have a book coming out here in March or April of 2024.
March
of 2024. Perfect. And it's all about you know, the interviews that you've had with these remarkable people. Is there a line that we can draw with all of these interviews, like one lesson or one thing in common that they all have besides talking with you and being remarkable people?
Well, actually, there's three lines. So line number one is, to be remarkable, you must have the growth mindset. You have to believe you can accomplish new things, learn new things. You can go beyond where you are. The second line is grit. You need to work hard. It's not going to just drop out of the sky and all of a sudden you're remarkable because your last name is Trump. And the third thing to really be remarkable is grace. You need to have the feeling that towards the end of your career, your responsibility is to pay back society and to help others. So it's growth, grit, grace. Those are the three sections of my book. And that's why a lot of people don't get on my podcast.
Yeah. Well, it's a tough way to go, but you've set the bar really high for somebody, and you never know. You're probably inspiring people that want to be on your show to have, you know, that grit, that grace, that growth mindset. I know for my family, we have a growth mindset book that we go through every Sunday, and I've got 9-year-old twins, and I want them to have that mindset. I want them to work hard, and then I want them, you know, to help out their fellow person. You know, why else be on this earth except for not helping out other people?
Yeah, that's good. It starts early. My father, you know, there's this French concept that my father explained to me. I don't know why he got it, because come from a poor part of Hawaii. He didn't exactly speak French, but anyway. So he said, there's this concept called noblesse oblige. And noblesse oblige is the thought that, you know, the nobility have an obligation to help others. Mm-hmm. And I have come to view that term somewhat negatively. I don't like the noblesse part, because the noblesse part implies that it's King Charles and Prince Harry, you know, that they're the nobility. So they have a obligation to help the common people. Mm-hmm. That's not what I'm saying. So I have redone that term, and my term trademarked. No, not trademarked. My term is success oblige. And success oblige is when you are successful, you have the moral obligation to help other people be successful. That's my new concept.
I love it. That's my next tattoo. That's my next tattoo. I'm getting that on there.
TM.
Yeah, I'll have the TM on that. I'll give you, you know, royalties and all that good stuff too. Well, I have one last question for you here, and this is kind of a little bit of a techie question, a little bit of a nerdy question.
Yeah.
At the end of your podcast, there's always a voice at the end of it, and it always, you know, remarkable people. Is that Seth Godin?
No.
No? Okay. All right.
What?
At the end of it, it goes, "This is Remarkable People." And
no,
and I hear other podcasts use that, you know, kind of thing to, for like, smart speakers and all that to, get their brand out there.
Wow. Now, you know, I don't think I've done it for a while, but when I did it, it was just a sort of play on NPR. You know, NPR, there's the NPR. This is NPR.
Yeah.
Right. So I was going, "This is Remarkable People," but I don't have a Newman, so it doesn't sound like NPR. Yeah. So this is like, if you play the Beatles 78 RPM backwards, they're saying, "Help me get out of Britain. Help me get out of Britain." Now you're imagining something that ain't there.
Okay. So it's just me. Cause I had an argument with my wife. I was like, he's got Seth Godin doing that. So it's actually you. So I lost the bet with my wife. Okay.
You should never bet against your wife.
You would think after, you know, 11 years of marriage, I would learn that, but I'm a little thick-headed.
So I just want to communicate to your listeners that, listen, my book, Think Remarkable, the whole purpose is to help you become remarkable. And let me address one issue. This is not a self-help reposition, write white papers, make yourself considered remarkable. That's not how people become remarkable. People become remarkable because they have made a difference. And if you make a difference, you will have no choice but to be considered remarkable by many people. And I can tell you with total certainty that Jane Goodall or Steve Jobs, they didn't wake up one day and say, "From now on, I'm going to figure out how to make people think I'm remarkable." Jane Goodall did her work in primatology. Steve Jobs made all these great devices. And by doing that, they became considered remarkable. That's the way you do things. So this is not that kind of self-help book where there will never be a Think Remarkable weekend seminar for $5,000. And you know, and the opening session is stand up and look to your right and look to your left and say to that person on your right, "You can be remarkable too. Now stand and look to your left and say that to the same person and hug each other." That ain't going to happen. That's not me. This book is, and I want people to understand that the reason why you would buy this book instead of listening to 219 episodes is because 219 episodes will take you roughly 250 hours. It ain't going to take 250 hours to read this book. So it reflects the wisdom of all these people that I've interviewed, plus my 40 years in my career, because a lot of it is, to be successful, you got to know what to pick and what not to pick. And this book is not a glamour, you know, ego piece, the guy way. This book is tactical and practical. I hope it is considered in the same vein as How to Win Friends and Influence People, The Effective Executive by Peter Drucker, Influenced by Bob Cialdini, If You Want to Write by Brenda Hewlett. This book is for you. It's not a, you know, puff piece for me. And so I hope it's timeless and people will, you know, I think the most likely people to buy it are parents who want to give it to their kids because their kids don't listen to them and they think maybe they'll listen to Guy.
That's why I'm buying it, because I know my kids don't listen to me. So, okay, you know, and my girls wanted to come downstairs and go, how do we start, you know, how do we learn how to surf in Virginia? Guy will know. I don't know.
Get him. Go get him. We'll talk about that right now.
They're in front of the TV right now. They're locked in. You know, I know better than to tear a 9-year-old away from the TV. I just leave it. Great. Well, Guy, it's been fantastic talking with you. Thank you for taking some time with me here today. I hope you have some, you know, good waves coming in today.
I hope.
Get your surfing done.
Listen, and thank you. And for the 15th time, let me thank you for that honor you gave me that, you know, you labeled my podcast such high quality. Really, it's very meaningful when someone who, how many podcasts do you look at? Hundreds, right?
I am personally subscribed to 150 at any time, but then I will look at about 500 a year and pick from that.
And of all of those, you picked out mine as one of the best.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Without a doubt. Because like I said in the review, if I'm feeling down, if I'm, you know, having imposter syndrome or whatever, I'm going to listen to your episode and I'm going to feel empowered. I get something out of every episode. The one that I listened to on the way back from Indy PodCon while I'm driving through Philadelphia and where you talked to the, I'm having a brain fart here. I can't remember the kid's name. But then you talked to his teacher.
Oh, Jonathan Conyers. He was a debate team in Brooklyn.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. And that just impacted me. It made my drive from New Jersey to Virginia nothing because I was so invested in everything that was going on with him and with his story. I was just like, you know, there, but for the grace of God, go I.
Right.
That could have been me.
That's true. That's true. Mm-hmm. And how many people listen to your podcast?
I usually get about 200 downloads per episode.
Yeah.
So I'm not, you know, the biggest name out there. I tell you, I have the most fun doing it.
Well,
yeah, I have more fun than Joe Rogan for sure. And I do 3 for myself and then I do 7 for work.
7 podcasts for work?
Yeah. 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 They're internal. On top of everything else I do for work, I'm the podcast guy at CBP. So
That's a phrase I thought I would never hear. You're the podcast guy for CBP.
Right. I never thought I would hear that either because I have a master's in theater education.
Well, I tell you what, the next time I go to Mexico, I'm going to let you know so you let your guys know that Guy's coming across.
I'll give him a call.
He's the Japanese guy on the surfboard paddling across. Let that guy in.
Let him in. We need him in here. We need him in.
All righty. Thank you so much for having me.
And that was my interview with Guy Kawasaki of Remarkable People Podcast. I want to thank you for listening in on this special bonus episode of Find a Podcast About. Make sure that you go to the website findapodcastabout.xyz, and right there you can get all the links and all the transcripts for this episode and for my interview with Guy Kawasaki. Special thanks to Guy and to Madison for making this one of the easiest and most fun interviews. And I think you can hear it in this interview how much fun that we had, a lot of laughter and a lot of great ideas and a lot of great thoughts that he was sharing with us. So for Find a Podcast About, this is Timothy Kim O'Brien, your guide to the podosphere, where I help you outsmart the algorithm and find your next binge-worthy podcast. Now go out there and binge Guy Kawasaki's Remarkable People podcast. And do yourself a favor, if you got kids, or if even if you don't have kids, go buy his book. I'll talk to you next time.